On these talks, which I give every Friday night here at Dhammaloka, I try to use Buddhist principles to address one of the problems of our modern daily lives. Buddhism is not just a theory which you read about and discuss over coffee tables. It's something which helps you become a happier, more peaceful person. The main framework of the Buddha's teachings is the Four Noble Truths, which I've rearranged to be the secret of happiness. That what actually is happiness, how to be happy, that we're sometimes unhappy, why we're unhappy, the Four Noble Truths. And the reason why, which I express it in this way, is because when we understand that the problems of life are nothing to do with, you know, something out there, it's always our attitudes, the way we regard and look at life, which causes the problems. And as such, it means that we can do something to alleviate those problems. If the problems were inherent in just life itself, then we would be able to do nothing. We'd be really victims of, you know, the ups and downs of life. But because from the earliest of times, you know, the Buddha and the enlightened monks and nuns, lay people, realized that one cannot change the world, but one can certainly change the way one looks at the world, and that is enough to create the alleviation of the problems and difficulties. It's the way we look at things is a problem. And so I usually choose a subject on every Friday night and apply those principles to that subject so that we can live happier, more peaceful lives. Not by changing the world, but by changing the way we look at it. And the problem this evening I'm going to talk about is very relevant to our modern times. It's excess busyness. And why it is that sometimes people have rushed to get here this evening. And maybe they've got a rush to check their email when they get back home. And they've got a rush tomorrow morning to get back on the computer to catch up with all the work they should have lost, or they should have done. And it's always catching up. We're just so busy people, and sometimes that we wonder, is this really what life is all about, just being a busy person? And I know what I'm talking about because I do a lot. Just look at the newsletter and see what I get up to. But as a monk, you have a different level of resources to use. Because as a monk, even though that I have many responsibilities and duties, and if you don't believe me, just have a look at what I get up to. Some years ago when I gave a talk in Singapore, I talked about these wonderful, beautiful attitudes of Buddhism, peace, kindness, being in the present moment, not worrying about things. And someone said in question time, that's all very well for you to say such things. You're a monk. You don't know what it's like to live in the real world. And I was not going to stand for that. I'm a monk with attitude. So I said, listen to what I was just doing today. From the time I got up early in the morning, 4 o'clock I think it was, and just working all that time until that evening, without any break. And this person got to the microphone again and said, my goodness, I never realized that monks work so hard. Until I heard that, I always thought that one day I might want to be a monk, but not now. I lost a monk. Well, the point is that I do work very hard with lots of responsibilities, but there is little strategies which you use in order not to get stressed out with the duties you have in life. You only have to go and have a walk through any hospital to see how many people are struggling with cancers, how many people are getting divorced, how many people suffer guilt and depression. They can't stand their bodies, or rather the bodies can't stand them and get cancers. Can't stand their wife, their husband, they can't even stand themselves. These are symbols or symptoms of our modern life. And these problems are on the increase, and they are directly related to the pace of our modern life and to the stress which many of us have to face. It is a problem, but there is a solution. And the solution is an attitude problem, which makes you far more efficient. You can get much more done without getting upset, without getting angry, without getting frustrated. So what to focus on this evening? The attitude problem. And the attitude problem is very much just one of changing the mind around to be able to have some rest. And the only way a busy person is able to have some rest is when they learn how to change their attitude from looking at what needs to be done instead to look at what's already been done, to what has already been achieved. There was a time after I took over being the abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery, I was getting so busy working, physically working hard, building the monastery with my own hands, laying the bricks and all of that, and at the same time just teaching Dhamma to all the monks, training them in the rules of discipline and in the teachings, and working so hard from Monday to Friday. In my weekend, I would come here to do more work. And I always remembered that as I was coming in the car from Serpentine to Perth, you'd pass all the people leaving Perth to go on a holiday. I wasn't going on a holiday, I was coming to work. And you'd work all Saturday and Sunday. And when there was a public holiday like New Year's, then you really had to work hard because everyone was free and they wanted to talk to the monk. So when everyone else was having holidays, I was really working hard. When everyone else was working, so was I. And so it was like that. From Monday to Friday, I'd work at my monastery. And from Friday evening, Saturday and Sunday, I'd work here. I was holding down two jobs. Not two jobs. And also in the early days, helping out Dharmasara, and then Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore, and then Buddhist societies in South Australia, in Sydney, and goodness knows where else. So it got to the point where I was going to get stressed out. And I remember going back to my monastery one Sunday evening, really tired, getting up early in the morning and thinking of all the work which I had to do, and said, no, enough. And I got into a habit for the next few months of every Monday morning, even though there was work to be done, letters to be written, telephone calls to be made, jobs to be completed, I got into a habit of every Monday morning, after a cup of tea, going for a walk around my monastery, not looking at what needed to be done, but looking at what had already been achieved. It was a different way of looking, that's all. Because I'd noticed that all these people would come to my monastery and say, oh, what a beautiful monastery you have. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it so peaceful? I thought, are you kidding? Look at all the stuff which still needs to be built. Look at all the gutters which need to be cleaned. Look at all the paths which need to be swept. Look at all the things which need to be done. What do you mean it's a nice, peaceful monastery? You don't know what it's like to be the abbot of the place. But I realized I was seeing it from an abbot's perspective, and everyone else was seeing it from a visitor's perspective. So I decided to change my perspective and look at my monastery from the perspective of a visitor. I got the visitor's mind, not the owner's mind. When I stopped the owner's mind and changed to the visitor's mind, then I started to see my monastery just as the way as everyone else sees it. It's a beautiful monastery there, and it's just so nice and so beautiful. And the leaves which have fallen on the paths, oh, they make it look so sort of, you know, natural. And the gutters and the leaves in the gutters, where else do you expect leaves to fall but in the gutters? That's where they belong. That's where we've got gutters for, to catch the leaves and also the rain as well. But whatever, I started to see it in a positive way. I saw all the things which had already been achieved, all the things which had been done, all the hard work which many, many people had done. And because of that, I appreciated my monastery. Because I could appreciate how much had been achieved, it was all right for me to take a rest. One of the reasons why we can't stop is because we see that there's so much to be done and we forget how much has already been achieved. That is the way to take a rest. Because sometimes we think we don't deserve to take a rest. There's too many things to be done. Let's get this out of the way before we take a rest. And as you all know, especially if you read my book, but I realize that not many people have read my book, even those who have read my book don't remember it, because we had a quiz night on New Year's Eve. And I found out just how many people haven't read my book and how many people have been coming to this place for so many years they don't know anything about Buddhism yet. My goodness. But anyhow, just I realized that I could rest. So much had been achieved. I deserve to take a rest. That's one of the problems. People don't understand that they need to take a rest. And in my little book, I mention a story that the only time in our society where people rest in peace is found at Karakata or Fremantle or any other cemetery you care to go to. Because there, I was there a couple of times last week, there you see engraved on the headstones, R.I.P., rest in peace. Isn't it too late by that time? Why can't you, for goodness sake, spend some time resting in peace now when you can enjoy it? So, it makes a lot of sense to give yourself some space, some time to rest in peace, to enjoy all that you've done so far. To give yourself permission to stop. To be able to give yourself permission to stop. Realize you deserve it and look at how much you have already achieved. So when you go back home tonight, when you look at all the dishes which are dirty in the sink, please also look at all the dishes which have already been cleaned and wiped and stacked in the on the drawer or on the shelf and think, wow, tonight I'm just going to look at all the dishes which have been cleaned. And that's good enough for tonight, I'll do it tomorrow. Never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. Which people say you're never going to achieve anything that way in life. The whole planet is going to sort of stop. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the planet could stop for a little while? One of the reasons why people can't stop, they don't allow themselves to stop, they don't know how to let go, because you're all, as I keep on saying, control freaks. We think that if I don't work hard, if I don't do all of this stuff, then no one's going to do it, it's all going to fall apart, the whole thing is going to be a mess. But the truth is opposite. Usually what happens when people don't control and when they do let go, things actually flow more smoothly. Apparently there was more power outages last week when it started raining. When the traffic lights don't work, when they stop, the traffic flows more freely. As I quoted, I mentioned this in one of my favorite quotes, somewhere in Israel, I think it was in Jerusalem, the doctors went on strike for a couple of weeks, and during that time the death rate in all the hospitals went down. Which sometimes makes you think that when we really get involved too much, we mess it up. So you are dispensable. You don't need to be at the controls. And in fact, sometimes when you're not in the controls, it does actually flow more freely without you. Now sometimes that's a bit challenging for people. It takes a lot of courage and guts actually to let go and to realize that you are dispensable. You don't need to always be pushing this thing along. But you find in life, if you don't trust other people, if you're always a control freak, not only do you get stressed out and tense because you always have to be the one who does things, but also you find that you never trust anybody, other people don't learn. And after a while, you have no one to actually to delegate authority to. Trust is important. It's almost the opposite of controlling. Controlling is done out of fear. And too many people are so afraid if it goes wrong. As a monk, I have this wonderful attitude. I don't care if it goes wrong. When I took over this job as being an abbot, I realized there were two possibilities. First of all, I was successful and I got lots of monks come to my monastery. What a wonderful thing that would be. Then I could actually serve Buddhism, do something good for the world. If I was successful, that would be great. But then I thought, if I was a hopeless abbot and no one wanted to come to my monastery, and I gave terrible talks and people fell asleep, or they started coming and bringing old tomatoes on a Friday night and throwing them at me. And I thought, wow, that'll be wonderful. Then I can stay in my monastery, be quiet, and have a bit of stillness, and not have to worry about coming here every Friday night. That'd be even better, actually. It was my big mistake by giving good talks. I should have really given terrible talks, like I did when I first came here. But either way, I realized that nothing could go wrong. Whatever what happened would be okay. I could make use of it. I could look at the positive side of it. And so because I never had any fear, there was no problems. What are you afraid of anyway? Sometimes, you know, I look at all possibilities. Because, I'm going to mention this now. I thought I shouldn't do, but I'm going to. I've already started. I can't stop myself when I start. I've received an invitation to actually to go and give some talks in Indonesia and in Bali. There's a seminar in Indonesia and in Bali. I felt very sad for the Balinese, there's many Buddhists in Bali, who, because of the double bombings in that country, are just really suffering because their economy is shot. There's hardly any money coming into the island. It was based on tourism, and now sort of they're in trouble. But people were saying, Ajahn Brahm, there's a travel warning by the Australian government. You'll get kidnapped. And I thought, wonderful. If I get kidnapped, then I don't have to come to Friday night talks for a few weeks. I can have a real rest. I can have a really nice meditate. And who knows, if I get kidnapped, I might even be able to convert some of the terrorists into being good Buddhists. Who knows? So you can always look at the positive side of things, but the people inviting me, guaranteed. So there's no possibility of that, which quite disappointed me. But never mind. Imagine how many stories I could come back with on a Friday night. But anyhow, back to the thing. The point is, you don't worry about anything, because whatever happens, you can always make something positive out of it. And this is like lacking in fear. When you don't have any fear, you don't tend to control things. When you don't control things, you can let go and you don't have to work so hard, hour after hour, making sure that everything goes perfectly. You're not a control freak. People who are run by fear become control freaks. Because they're control freaks, they have to work so hard. Because they work so hard, they get stressed out and everything does go wrong and they think they have to control even harder, and you get this vicious cycle. Of fear, lack of trust, things go wrong, and they have to work even harder. And this is a problem with our modern life. We're so driven by fear of what might go wrong, that we control too hard. And that's in our relationships as well. People who have a partner, and they're so afraid what might happen if that partnership breaks up, because they have so much investment in that relationship, they're so afraid. They control the other person, they're afraid of what they do, they don't trust them when they go out by themselves at night, and because of their fear, because of their control, the whole relationship becomes dysfunctional. It's not a happy relationship, it's not built up on this wonderful part of love called trust. The whole thing falls apart. The thing they were afraid of happens. And this is a problem with our life. Instead of thinking what might go wrong, we think of what might go right. The positive part of it. And this has become so negative in our modern life. Always looking at what might go wrong. Look at all the things which are wrong, all the things which need to be done. And that Monday morning at my monastery, walking around, I wasn't going to be a control freak for at least 2 or 3 hours. Just enjoy the place as it is. Be appreciative of all the things which are already there. Not look at all my jobs which I had to do, but forget about all of those. Live in the present moment, appreciate, grateful, joy, peace. And because of that, that's an attitude which I developed. So whenever I do go overseas, I'm not afraid what my monks get up to when I'm away. I don't go ringing up every few minutes. Remember, there's this one guy here. He's not here now, thank goodness, otherwise he'd get embarrassed about this story. But he was one of these guys who was, he could actually, you know, astral travel, you know, leave his body and go floating out and visiting people. And I remember him telling me that he got this job up in one of the other cities of Australia. I won't tell the city, otherwise I'll give the game away who it is. And he got this job in another city in Australia. He was there on a contract for about 3 or 4 months. His wife was back in Perth. He didn't trust her. So every week he'd astral travel out of his body back to Perth and check up, see what his wife was up to. And his wife could actually tell he was around because he was sensitive enough and said, get out of here, I'm being faithful. But he didn't trust her. And imagine what that's like, having a partner like that. Especially if they could astral travel because they could really find out what you really are up to. If any of you sort of, you know, can't afford a detective, I'll come here and I'll teach you through meditation how to astral travel so you can find out what, you know, your partner really does do on a Monday afternoon when you're at work. But anyhow, it's just a control freak problem which, because of fear, it means that we have this dysfunctional relationship with our partner, with our children, with everybody, and even with our job. We can't trust, we can't let go, we can't allow things to run. I don't have that with my monks, I leave them alone. I trust them. When you actually trust a person to do their very best, they usually do a much better job than when you're always on top of them trying to control them. It is all about what we call delegation. Being able to allow another person to do the job without looking over their shoulder all the time, telling them what to do. As an abbot, as a manager of a monastery, that's something which I learned. You know, you learn because my teacher Ajahn Chah didn't just teach you like intellectual Dhamma. He made sure that you understood these teachings of Buddhism in a practical way so you could run your own monasteries, eventually be successful. You know, just even running a monastery is like running a family. So what he actually taught is have this beautiful loving kindness towards everybody. And the loving kindness is something which is forgiving, which is encouraging, which is trusting. That's part of this beautiful thing of a human being called embracing the other person as they are, appreciating them, not fault-finding. The opposite of loving kindness you might call like fault-finding. Seeing what's wrong with your partner, seeing what's wrong with your job, seeing what's wrong with the government, seeing what's wrong with yourself. It's completely fault-finding. And that's what I was always doing when I was walking around my monastery, always finding fault, seeing the things which need to be fixed. I was the manager, and managers are fault-finders. That's what they're supposed to do. See the problems and fix them up. And that's why we get to be control freaks, that's why we get stressed out. So instead of being a manager, the opposite of that, of being the fault finder, loving kindness, embracing, being grateful for the person you're living with, being grateful for yourself, being grateful whatever happens to you in life, embracing life as it is, all of it, no matter what happens. This is a great thing about life. It doesn't matter what happens to you, you can always make use of it. Everything can be used in life. I learned this from my teachers over in Thailand when they said everything in a forest needs to be there, even the flies in the bush. And there's been more flies this season than there's ever probably been in many years because the weather's very strange this season. Instead of people saying, oh, there are too many flies in the bush, wonderful, there are so many flies, that means there's more birds. And I love the little birds in the monastery. It means it's more wonderful waking up in the morning and see the dawn chorus at 4:30. Do you get up that time? You're missing a lot. The point is there that you can see the positive side in everything. You don't need to become so negative. When you're not so negative, you don't need to control things so much. You don't control things so much. You can flow with things so more. You don't have to be such a manager, such a business person. You can let go. And you find your company, your monastery, your family, even your body, tends to flow more smoothly. It actually works. I should have worked a bit harder before I came in here because I had this article I was going to read out this evening. There was an article from an engineering journal from the UK about this company who won a prize. It won a prize for best business practices because it banned overtime. It said everybody goes home at 5 p.m, that's it. And the reason they did this is because they realized that when people work too long, Number one, they become inefficient. Number two, they get grumpy and angry, and politics starts in the workplace. People get upset, they start to leave, and they have to have this huge staff turnover where they always have to keep training new people to do the job. That is bad company policy. So, the directors of this company, they banned overtime. It was a company which was maintaining buildings, elevators, stuff like that in big buildings. Once they banned overtime, the staff turnover plummeted to almost zero. People stayed in the job because they realized these bosses actually cared for their staff. They had time with their family every evening. They were happier. They were more efficient. And the turnover of that company trebled in 1 year, let alone the profits. That's why it won the prize. It's not just theory, it works. The other quote, I actually saw this on the plane going up to Penang, and I cut it out of the newspaper. I'm not sure if I should have cut it out of the newspaper, it might have been for the next person on the plane, but never mind, I did. Because it was a great article, simply about this journal of psychology, I think was in the University of California in San Francisco. Of course, they realize it's not just a successful person becomes happy. They say, no, happiness comes first, and then you become successful. That was a big finding. They found that happy people who are happy first, then become good at their sport, they become successful in business, they become good in their love life as well. And you should all know that. Who wants to sort of marry a miserable person? Even happy people also become successful in the monk life as well. See? But the point was that they were showing that the happiness is also important in your business, in your success, in your productivity, in your ability to sell your product to your customers in order to run the business or whatever else you have to do there. Happiness comes first. So how happy can you be when you're doing 15, 16 hours a day? When you're so tired and you're stressed out? How many angry people are there in the world? How many have you met this week? Why are they angry? It's so common that people come up to me, as they did this evening, every day they come up and say, why do these people shout at me? Why do they get so upset? Why do they swear at me? Why do they do this? The reason they ask that question is because I've done nothing. I never did anything, but they shouted at me, they swore at me, they were upset at me. What have I done? It's unfair. And of course you know the reason why, that people get upset, they get angry, they swear, they shout. Nothing to do with you. It's because they are tired. Very, very tired. They're stressed out. I realized this the first time in my monastery in Thailand. I noticed that people would always have arguments. I'm talking about monks now. Monks have arguments sometimes. The monks would have arguments, and I noticed after a while, because I was a physicist before, I started to notice the patterns. They'd always get angry the one day a week, and that was the day after we'd spent all night without sleep meditating. Once a week, we'd forego our sleep, meditate all night until dawn, after dawn, go on our arms round, after arms round, have our meal, and afterwards we can get a rest. But before we had a rest, that's where the arguments always started. And I noticed myself falling into the same trap one day when I noticed a couple of monks who were supposed to be sitting up all night like I was, and they sneaked off. And they thought that no one saw them, but I saw them. They weren't going to get away with that. If I had to stay up all night, I can't see why anyone else could sneak off. I wasn't going to stand for this. That wasn't playing by the rules. That wasn't fair. So I thought, I'm going to really tell those guys off. Going back to their rooms and sleeping when they should have been up at night. That's really wrong. But I noticed that arguments would always start because of things like that. On the day after staying up all night. So I resolved, I will not confront those scallywag, lazy, good-for-nothing monks until after I'd had my rest. But I was afraid I might forget. So I wrote their names down on a piece of paper to remind myself to tell them off, to give them what for, to give them a piece of my mind after I've had my rest. I wrote it down, had a nice rest, and when I woke up after rest, I looked at that piece of paper, and this is true, I thought, why am I going to say something like that? The poor monks. Actually, the reason I got angry was not because I thought they were doing the wrong thing. The reason I got angry because I was jealous. I wish I had the guts to have done that instead of being so proud. That's the reason why. When I realized what I was about to do, it wasn't worth it. So I threw that piece of paper away. And I never did scold those monks. But what I realized, I would have got very angry and I started an argument, some bad feeling in the monastery, not because they'd done something particularly wrong, but because I was tired. And I realized that that is the main cause for arguments, the main cause for problems and difficulties, because today's people are just so tired. When people come on my meditation retreats, I tell them, for the first 3 days, I want you to meditate flat out. Which means, you know, flat out on your bed. Sleep. Because you've got sleep deficit. You're tired. Sometimes people don't realize how tired they are. That's why they have the word in medicine, sleep deficit. People go to these holidays or these monasteries or retreat centers like mine. And they spend the first couple of days, they're so surprised, sleeping a lot. They just can't get up in the morning. And they feel guilty. They stop feeling guilty. The reason you can't get up in the morning is because your body won't let you get up in the morning. It's got this opportunity to catch up, to rest, to be still and peaceful. Take it. Because of that sleep deficit, which many people have, and why do they have that? Because you work so hard. You struggle so much to get by, there's so many things to do. That's why we're tired. It's obvious. It's nature. Stop trying to be a control freak and think that's not happening and think that you can be the super person who doesn't need to sleep. So because of that, you can understand sleep deficit, tiredness is there, and that's why we get grumpy, that's why we get upset. You know, a lot of marriages will be saved if you just send your husband, your wife, to the monastery and I just put them in a room and tell them to sleep for 3 or 4 days. So they can get rid of their tiredness and relax. And they come up with, she's not such a bad girl, my wife, after all. Yeah, he's not such a bad guy, you know. Because when you are rested, you don't tend to get negative. When you're not negative, you don't start arguments. That's where the negativity comes from. So you can imagine, if you are someone who works for such a long period of time, you're stressed out, no wonder you can't hold a relationship together. Or your kids, sort of just, they don't like being around you. You're grumpy. You're negative. You're tired. And that negativity, it always eventually ends up in these physical problems. So, it is in your interest. Actually, not maybe in your interest, but in other people's interest. Think of all the people who have to put up with you. So you give yourself a break, give yourself a rest. If you can do that, you will find the truth of that philosopher Blaise Pascal. I wrote this in the book, saying all the troubles of man, he said, but he also meant all the troubles of women as well, all come from not knowing how to sit still. To take a rest. That's where the problems start. Because we don't give ourselves a break. That's one of the reasons why we teach meditation here, why meditation relieves stress. How does meditation relieve stress? It's not something magical. It's just giving yourself a break, giving yourself a rest, allowing the energies to come back into the mind so you feel bright, you feel energetic, and you feel positive, and you're happy. So many people say that when you come to meditate and you go on a retreat, you go back to such a nice wife, such a lovely husband. It's like a brand new model. You send it to me. And you get back all nice and shiny and bright and happy and positive. So this is actually what happens, and the reason is because you rest. You give your mind a rest, you give a body a rest. And this is why we have to rest, because it makes our mind happier, more positive, and then we become more efficient. And that's the wonderful thing about that company. They knew what efficiency was and how that their company could do better without the necessity of so much stress in their life. So give yourself a break. Even at many corporations up in the United States, so I was told, they have time out rooms. Time out rooms for the senior executives. What for? To rest. They have these time out rooms where the mobile phone will not work. They have some sort of gizmos there, or so the message cannot come to any mobile phones, even if you have got it switched on. No one can contact you there. When you get in that room, you're uncontactable for a long time. Now, because of that, they have those things there because they know that their executives can work much more efficiently once they've rested. And it's important, if you're going to be successful in your career, if you're going to, your company is going to be successful, if it's going to have the competitive edge on today's cutthroat society, this is your Buddhist competitive edge. You can take time out every now and again to increase your efficiency, to make sure your brain is working to the peak of its capacity, so you don't get grumpy and waste all this time in office politics, so you have so much loving kindness that people want to work for you. They want to actually to do their very best for you because you're such a kind person, never gets angry at anybody because you know how to rest. If we don't know how to rest, our whole life starts to go wrong, which is the problem of our modern world. We get into this cycle, tiredness, negativity, controlling, working even harder, and just getting more and more negativity. We wonder what's going on. Is that really what you want to do for your life? Many, many people have lots of wealth, but they've got no time to enjoy it. The problem is some of those stories. One of my favorite stories is about the child who, when his father came home, asked his father, "Daddy, how much do you earn at work?" "Shut up," said the father. "I'm tired." "Daddy, how many dollars do you earn?" "Look, I told you, be quiet." "Daddy, how many dollars do you earn at work?" "Shut up, go to your room." And the angry father sent his poor little five-year-old up to his room. When his father had a cup of tea and a sandwich, when he got his energy back, he felt so guilty, he shouted at his five-year-old. So he went up to his child's room and knocked softly at the door. "Can I come in?" He went in and said, "Look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was so angry at you. I was just tired. I'd just come back from a busy day at work. I don't know why a five-year-old wants to know this, but I earn $20 an hour." And the child smiled and said, "Daddy, can I borrow $10? And the father was about to blow up, but he got angry at his child once. He bit his lip and said, "I don't know what a five-year-old wants $10 for, but here you are. I'm not going to get angry at you again today." And so he gave his son a $10 note. And his son smiled and reached underneath his pillow. And in coins and $1 notes, he got out another $10. He said, "Here, Daddy, here's $20. Now, can I have 1 hour of your time, please?" Isn't that an interesting story? The little son had to buy 1 hour of his daddy's time, because that's the only way he could have time with his daddy. Now do you understand one of the problems of our modern life? Why does a little son have to ask like that? Why does a wife have to ask from her husband, can we just go out tonight? Why do you always have to work? Can't we have a holiday? Can't we just enjoy each other's company as we did when we were young? Is this really what life is all about? just working, working, working until the only time you can rest in peace is at Karakata. So after a while we look and see, no, we can have everything. And we can have the company, we can have even a good house. Look at me. I've got my townhouse, not townhouse, I've got this whole compound here, 1 acre. This is my town complex. And I've got my country residence at Serpentine. So you can have a lot. But you have a lot not by working yourself to such a point you get sick, tired, negative, and you can't stay with anybody, and you can't even stay with yourself. And at night time you're just so tired, you're negative. So often people work because that's one way of not spending time with oneself. So this way we can be very successful in life, we can become very productive, even more productive, but without creating too many problems, physical problems, social problems, and even our own mental problems. People get depressed because they're angry at life and themselves, they realize they can't control life. They get angry at their spouse because they can't control them, they get angry at life because they can't control anything. Surely you should learn now to be able to let go. I've been trying for years to not make sure that people aren't angry, but they still get angry, even here. I'm trying for years to make sure the world's a peaceful place, but people still have wars. I realize this is the nature of the world. You try and influence, but you don't try to control. You try and be kind, but you don't try to make people different. Because kindness is embracing people as they are, not wanting them to be different. To realize that everyone in this world has their place. Everyone. So when you realize that everyone has their place in this world, even the criminals sometimes have their place. When a burglar comes to your house, they're all teaching you non-attachment. Hard practice sometimes, but there it is. When the traffic light gets red, they're telling you, slow down. You can't get there as fast as you want to. There are many things in life which are teaching us, but sometimes, instead of teaching us and listening to the lessons of life, we think that something's gone wrong, that traffic lights shouldn't be this way, there shouldn't be any burglars, there shouldn't be any cancers. Cancer's also teaching a lesson. There's something there. It's teaching our world, are we going a bit too fast? Are we really missing the point of life? When I do have funeral services, and I was, what was it there, on Tuesday afternoon, down at Frio again, Sunday before I was at Karakata. Tell the story of one of the friends who was living in Sydney, a big business person, working many hours a day, just very successful in life, but not so successful with his family. Always having arguments, kids having trouble, we know what it's like. Is that you? But anyhow, he had a medical checkup a few days later. His doctor, a personal friend, called him at home. And the first words the doctor said, "Is your wife there? If you get a call from your doctor, and that's the first thing he says, you, my friend, are in trouble." And he was. It had come back from the lab. The tests, the blood tests, he had a rare but lethal form of cancer. There was no treatment. He was going to die. How long, did he say? The doctor said, "We can't say. 3 months, maybe 4. Certainly not 6. Like many people who have those experiences, it comes literally as a shock. When you first get these cancers, you feel okay. You wonder, why me? I feel okay. But the tests are there. He was philosophical, stoical, sensible, "Thank you," he said. And he talked it over with his wife. After they got through the shock and the grief, he decided, like many people do when they have cancers, before it gets worse, to have the trip of a lifetime. He'd always promised his wife and his children, one day they'd go and visit Europe. But of course, busy, he never had the time. Now, he only had 3 months. He sold his business, almost within a week. Even though if he'd have waited longer, negotiated, haggled, done some horse trading, he could probably got some more money. But he didn't have time. He sold the business. And he bought first class tickets on 5-star hotels for him, his wife and his children to go to Europe on this trip of a lifetime. Apparently he had those tickets in his hand when the telephone rang. He picked up the phone. It was his doctor. "I don't know how to tell you this," he said. "There's been a mistake. Two surnames, the same. You are perfectly healthy." One of these true stories which happened. And he never sued that doctor. He keeps calling that doctor his teacher. He's one of his greatest friends. He was so grateful for that experience because he went on that holiday overseas with his family, had a wonderful time. When he got back home, he had enough money left. Apparently, he bought a little truck stop somewhere outside in New South Wales somewhere. That experience taught him the meaning of life. Sometimes you do need to kick up the backside hard to learn what this life is all about. Is that really what life is all about? Just working 9 to 9 maybe, I don't know, 9 to 11, 7 to 9. Now you've got your computers and you've got email, you can work at any time. Isn't it a terrible thing that before you could only work in your office? Now you can work, you know, at the beach, you can work at the cafe, you can work in the toilet even, I think these days. At least you should have like internet free zones in the toilet so that broadband can't reach. Somewhere anyway. But the point is that that person learned what was really important. And look, I go to so many funeral services. That's part of my job. Many times a week. I know all these funeral directors. They will say, "Hi, Brahm, how are you doing?" When I leave, I say, "Very nice to meet you. I hope I don't meet you again soon." I tell the funeral directors. It's not that I don't like you guys, but if I come, it means, you know, another Buddhist is dead. And we're trying to keep as many Buddhists as we can. It's not just that. The point is that at each of these funeral services, they're brilliant, they're great, because that's what you learn about what's really important in life. What's really important in life? You go to someone's funeral service and listen to what people say about them. Listen to the eulogies. That's how people will remember you when you die. It's the eulogies sum up the meaning of life. They never talk about how big their house was or how much money they have in the bank. Accountants never read out anything at a funeral service. At a funeral service, you talk about the qualities of the person, how kind they were, how well they were loved by their children, some of the funny stories. You know, when they were a child and they blew up the toilet, you know, those sorts of things. The funny stories. And that's what life is all about. You know, the times you spend with your family. Sometimes it's, you know, making an idiot of yourself or doing stupid things, but it's with others and you enjoy it. It's with people, not with your computer. We never get a eulogy from your favorite computer at a funeral service. You know, your computer doesn't attend. People do. Because really, this is what life is about. The meaning of life. You hear at funeral services, but unfortunately for many people, or for one person at every funeral service, it's too late to really understand what the meaning is. For everybody else, it's quite clear. Put value back into your life. You can still be successful. It's not an either or, it's a win-win. You can be successful in your business, successful in your life, and happy with yourself, and not so grumpy. You won't create so much anger and negativity in the world. because you are not tired, you can love others. You can even love yourself. You don't need to think that, you know, the bottom line of your salary or the amount of money you have in the bank is what's really important to your self-respect. You can respect yourself because you are kind. Because you have time to enjoy the people in your life. You may even have time to come to the Buddhist Society on a Friday evening and listen to Ajahn Brahm's old jokes. Whatever it is, you have time. Our modern life, we are rich in material things, but poor in time. Why is that so? And because we've lost our sense of how to be efficient and what's important in life. You can do both. You can spend time with your family. You can enjoy yourself in the evening time. And you can still work as well and be successful. If you know that beautiful balance, what we call even like the middle way, you will be a very efficient person. And maybe you too, or your company, can win one of those prizes by banning overtime, by learning that happiness is the key to success, and that negativity, which comes from tiredness, just ruins your body, gives you cancers, ill health. The negativity means you just no partner is good enough for you. Negativity means you're not good enough for yourself. You get depressed, upset at yourself, never thinking you're good enough. That negativity just spoils the whole life. Is that why you're working so hard for? Just to get more negative, more down, more suffering, to get sicker, to get to that Karakata faster. Instead, slow down. When you slow down, you can achieve much more. There's an old saying, you can write this on your desk, there's not much time, therefore we must go slowly. It seems paradoxical when you say there's not much time, it means we think we must go faster. But because there's not much time, number one, we can't afford to make mistakes. Therefore we have to be efficient, slowly, carefully. And number two, because we've not got much time, we have to enjoy the days we have instead of wasting them. There's not much time, therefore we must go slowly. If ever I start a company, that will be my motto. Not just do it, or not just things go better with whatever. Because this is going on now, I shouldn't actually mention any sponsors. Unless they give a donation to the Buddhist Society first of all. But that will be my motto. There's not much time, therefore we must go slowly. I learned that when early years at Bodhidharma Monastery, we were doing some building, we had to blast some rock. And when the person, the expert, the engineer, put the explosive in the rock, and he lit the detonator, and then it started to run, he said, don't run. Because when you run, when there's like an explosion about to happen, that's when accidents happen. You trip over. There's plenty of time to walk. Stop panicking. It's the same I learned when there's bushfires. When there's a bushfire, you don't run away from the fire. It's when you run, it's when you fall over, you break a leg, and that's when you die. When there's not much time, go slowly, go carefully. And then you always succeed in life. Even in business, don't panic. Go slowly through life. And then you get there faster. There's not much time. So, we must go slowly. And then we feel more at ease. We've got our energy. We're sensitive to each other. We're sensitive to life. And most importantly, we're sensitive to ourselves. We care. When you care, you'll be successful. Have a wonderful love life, a wonderful physical body, a wonderful business. You have everything you ever want. That's Ajahn Brahm's key to success. If it doesn't work, then you can actually come and ask for your money back. Come and sue us. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure it does work. It's been proved over the centuries to work. This is actually how you enjoy life. So you can still get a lot done, but you don't need to be so busy. Take time off. Appreciate. Feel grateful for what's already been achieved. Trust other people. Sometimes go slowly and take time out. You deserve it. And so does your company. So does your partner. and so does your children. Thank you. Okay, anyone got any questions or comments about this? You have to do the questions quickly, please. We've only got a couple of minutes. That's a joke. Any questions, please, about tonight's talk? Yes. How you make an appointment? I make an appointment with the present moment. Now. So you find that all time is created by craving, by desire. It's actually the craving creates the time. And the more craving, the less time you have. When you actually let go more and more, you have all the time in the world. In fact, like time expands when you learn how to flow with things and being in the moment, rather than always be in the future, always in the past. We're making appointments with what? Most of the time, our appointment is with our own death. And after a time, I don't know how old you are, sir, but sometimes, where's all these years gone? How fast does life go when you're rushing around? And after a while you think, why? 20, 30, 40 years, where's it all gone? You've always been running to get somewhere. That's why you're never here. You find out the most important thing in life is stopping every now and again. Have a metaphor of a journey. You work all day, but then, at the end of the journey, you sit down and rest in some sort of hostel or hotel or quiet, calm place. We're not going anywhere, but you're resting for the night. In the morning, you can carry on your journey of life. But if you walk all day and you walk all night, then you don't get very far because you die when you're very young. So our appointment, every evening, give yourself rest. So you can just enjoy your family. Stop doing so much. Give yourself time. And in the morning you're refreshed and you can walk on your journey in life, refreshed with more energy. You get further in life that way. So your appointment is now, because now is the evening time. Now is the time to stop working, to enjoy, to be at peace. Does that make sense? Any other questions anyone has? Time is running out. About 8.